I used to love Computer Shopper, though. I used to, like, when I got it, I read it from the back to the front. They had, like, all these little ads in the back, and they were all the different dealers. I don't know if you can see any of that stuff, but, like, you know.
Oh, I see the Athlon 64 over there.
Oh, yeah. And so, like, that's where all the real, they were almost, like, classified ad type, you know, setup. You know, the Spotlight Index, they called it.
Yeah.
And so, like, you got the Academic Warehouse. You probably remember that thing from way back. And, you know.
The recommended ones to take to school and stuff.
Yep. People buying.
Remember that one? It was like a 60 Minutes expose thing on this girl went out and bought a Dell, but it came with Linux.
Right.
Ubuntu. It was like 6.04 or something. And she was not happy with
it.
She
had no idea what to do.
All I want to do is put my DVD in the player, and it doesn't work.
Absolutely.
Felt so bad.
You know, they got good deals on, well, back then they had Macromedia Flash MX 2004 for $95. A Dreamweaver MX was also $95, and Studio MX was $189.
Dreamweaver!
Yeah,
dude,
make
Dreamweaver.
Websites, right?
And that was also... Yeah, and that was also in the heyday of Flash.
Yep,
where,
it was.
There were a couple of different schools of Flash media. One of them was it was basically just animations. I mean, people would basically make full on cartoons in Flash.
Oh yeah,
you had this middle ground where like it was comic style, like interactive comic style, where you would either flip the page or click a button. The one that I remember the most is Joe Cartoon. That guy made a bunch of, they were crude jokes. And I mean, I remember this one specifically where it was a bunch of flies sitting on the edge of a beer can getting drunk. And like one of them fell in and they were all just like, oh man, you know, and just making stupid jokes the entire time.
Right.
That is classic internet, man.
It really is. Yep.
And Dreamweaver built every one of the web pages.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The other one that there was another article in here that they talked about going from 32-bit to 64-bit, right? And so, like, the AMD, the AMD 64-bit machines were kind of, they were coming out. And there was this ZT home theater system that basically had a little... you know, LED display thingy on it. And it basically would spit out messages. And one of them was, you know, you've got mail, basically. And it told you had two email messages, you know, so you could go check it without actually powering on your computer system. You could just, well, I mean, fully, you could just look at it on the display rather than open up the mail application or look at the indicator in the tray.
Man, the world before phones, not even just phones, not even just mobile phones, but essentially the iPhone.
Yeah,
man, when you could truly disconnect. Coming up in this episode. The AI revolution is coming. The history of mate. And then we read the tea leaves. And then we look to lighten the load. Hello and welcome to Linux User Space. I'm Leo.
And I'm Dan.
Dan. The AI revolution is coming.
I welcome, you know, our AI overlords.
I don't think you have a choice.
I think they're coming, whether we like it or not, right?
Right. It started, you know, to the accessible masses. It started with iOS and macOS adding in the ability to just look at a photo, double click on somebody, and it like highlight them, and then you can just send that as a sticker without the background or anything like that. And then we got Android, where Google allowed you to start like scribbling on stuff and removing backgrounds and removing people from the background so that you had it, you had an image that was exactly what you had imagined it to be, except for that guy that was walking across while you were taking the photo.
Right.
You could just scrub him out.
Get that guy out of there, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then you got Windows adding in that same feature in some of their more recent insider builds. You know, but these are, besides Androids, I guess, this is stuff that doesn't really affect us on Linux. But I have to ask the question.
Mm-hmm.
It's becoming part of the overall expectation of what a computer can do, what a device can do. So when are those types of features, the predictive text, the being able to scrub out parts of an image and have AI kind of overlay it with, you know, more of the beach, being able to automatically edit videos and things like that, when is that stuff coming to Linux?
Well, Leo, you're in for a treat. It's here now.
Yes! I'm so excited. What do I got to install? What do I got to do?
You might not be happy about it because, like,
oh,
I feel like I don't know if things have changed, but Deepin seems to be first in line for this. And I know people have their reservations just in general about Deepin, right? Because it's not, you know, where it comes from, the source of it. Right. And
I think when we dove into Deepin, I mean, we didn't other than weird licensing terms, mm-hmm. we didn't really find anything that was.
We didn't find any issue with it. But there were people like right before that, there were people that were like, oh, no, it's phoning home and whatever. It's reporting all your information. But it's probably not. Your mileage may vary, and you really should check into that sort of thing, because like we were talking about in the pre-show, a lot of these things do rely on things out on the internet, so they do have like farms that are, you know, processing all of the artificial intelligence stuff. So I don't know if the apps that Deepin is bundling into the operating system require internet connectivity, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Or if it can be all done locally, like a lot of the other tools that exist on other operating systems.
But you said it. I think that is really where we have, those of us in the Linux sphere, we have the ability to kind of iterate on that. What I'm afraid of is that we're a conservative bunch. You know, I think, you know, we're about to see it in the Mate history. We've seen it time and time again with XFCE, with the moves that GNOME makes, with the things that Plasma does. A lot of the people in the community don't like a whole lot of change. And I think that's going to fall on the same kind of opinion when we're talking about AI stuff. Ooh, AI stuff. We don't need that in our operating system.
Right.
I can type just fine. I don't need predictive text. I don't need the, I can use GIMP. I don't need something to be able to like remove the background out for me or anything like that. And I feel like that attitude is going to kind of stifle innovation in where we compute, where we do pretty much everything day to day.
Well, yeah, I mean, because like you hear a lot of a lot more up in arms than you do open arms to embrace a lot of these things, right?
I love that. Okay, I'm gonna cut that part out, and I'm gonna play that on repeat for the rest of my life.
So I mean, that's like the tinfoil hat is on pretty tight a lot of times, and that's fine. Like your right to privacy, I very much support that. So if you don't want your thing out there getting, you know, adding to the model or whatever, I can understand that. I can understand you wanting to keep it private.
At that point, you can't post anything publicly. You know, no one's going to respect your robot.txt file that tells the AI crawlers to not look at your website. They're going to ignore it. It doesn't matter whether you want that out there or not. If you post it publicly, it's going to be consumed by an AI model somewhere.
Yeah.
That's just the truth of it.
Right.
But it also can work to our advantage in that we can take those models, or at least the models that are open, and there are tons of them out there that are open. Yeah. And we can use those in AI generator things. And saying AI is so far out there. It's not it's artificial, but it's not intelligent.
No, it's predictive modeling. That's right. That's really what we want to call this.
There you go. Predictive models. And you can take those things, and at least as far as Linux and Windows are concerned, you pretty much have to use an NVIDIA graphics card to be able to churn these things out. But the strength that we would have is in creating the software that would generate that stuff locally, unplug from the internet. You know, use it on a machine that you're going to wipe right after if you're that tinfoil hatty about it. But you're able to use these technologies and these models and these things to generate stuff locally without posting anything out on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is where the strength is in stuff like this, and where we could advance it, or because there are softwares like that in macOS. There's a software called Diffusion B where you can I think there's a little bit of leeway to go, but I think the developer's working on it, where you can just go grab any model that you want to. It's a AI image generation thing. You can go grab any model that you want to on the internet, stuff it into Diffusion B, all offline. Just download the model and then go offline. Stuff it into Diffusion B, and it will use that model to create images based on you know, the set of information that the model was fed in the first place. And you can do that privately. You can do that privately.
Right.
You can do that locally. You can do that offline. And I think we're doing ourselves a disservice by looking at a lot of this AI stuff and then just brushing it off and saying, oh, that's just, it's stuff that's going to come and go. But it, because it's not. It's for better or for worse.
Yeah, it's out there.
And you might think it's for worse, but it doesn't matter, because this kind of stuff is here to stay. And I, for one, locally, privately, want to take advantage of predictive text. So that it can, you ever tabbed in the command line?
Yes.
Because that kind of stuff, I don't want it to tell me what to say,
no.
But I do want it to take my ideas and stick it in there faster.
Well, it's a lot like using Fish Shell, right? Because where it actually does those completion things for you in a way. And so that's very predictive. It's reading your history from what you've already done, mostly, and it knows what's on your system, so it knows what's possible. So it looks at, like, your frequently, you know, the frequent tools that you use or command line options and stuff. So it knows what you probably want in a way based on what your history has been. And so it's not as advanced, obviously, as AI, but you want that. I understand you want that type of functionality.
But in everything.
In everything.
In absolutely.
Yeah, that's fair.
Everything. But I want it, again, I want, like, there's a distinction, right? Because the AI that I think a lot of people are pushing are, like, the open AI, the stable diffusion, but a lot of these things, when people think about them, are the ones that are in some data center somewhere that are also not only doing what you ask it to do, you know, with various results, but also taking your prompts and everything else and adding that to the model. What I'm really talking about is not that last step.
Right.
Taking the model and then using it privately and locally without adding anything back. But you know, you kind of run into this situation where you do got to give back sometime. And in a case like that, it's giving a couple of bucks to the guy that wrote the software to help you be able to use those models, or someone that put the model together that helps you in your workflow, sending them some money so that they can continue to refine that model so that you can take it offline and use it personally, privately, locally. But that's, there's a way to be able to take a lot of what's happening out there right now and removing a lot of the commercial cruft from it. But I think that's what we've done in Linux again and again and again and again and again. And we're going to see it in the history. We're going to see it. I mean, even within Linux projects, you see something going the direction that you don't want it to, and you take it and you change it and you use it the way that you want.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way that we need to be looking at this AI stuff.
Yeah.
Because someone coming to Linux is now going to be expecting these features.
That's for sure. We're behind.
And so if someone coming from in probably like 6 months, someone coming from Windows saying, oh, hey, so I just got this Linux thing and I have this image and I want to get rid of this person in the background. How do I do that? There is no answer. And in 6 months, will there be one?
Well, I hope you're using Deepin. That's my answer.
Exactly.
Because the two big things that they came out with in January, they announced it. The big things that they came out with were an IDE, or, you know, code, you know, development environment, if you will.
Think of VS Code, right?
VS Code.
Like that
so
thing.
So they came out with their own VS Code type thing. Code AI is a big thing. You hear about it on like GitHub.
Copilot
and all that
jazz. Yeah. That's in Windows now. It's in like pre-release on regular Windows. You don't have to sign up for the Insider. You just get Copilot now. It's just there.
Yeah, it's weird. So this is like that, only it's the Deepin version. But the other thing that you said you really wanted was the image editing stuff, and they've got that. They've got a image viewer, and they've added some AI things so you can fix, you know, all the, like, blur the background and scrub out things that you don't want to see and stuff like that. Real basic, I guess, image editing, but still image editing nonetheless.
Well, but specifically the, what did you say, predictive intelligence.
Right.
Editing. Because, yeah, one of the other features was, and I think a lot of people are doing this out on Mastodon and Twitter and everywhere else, where you feed it an image and then it gives you like a stylized version of that. You know, change me into an anime character, or change me into a comic character. And, you know, and then you use that result as your profile picture or something like that. I mean, this is real simple stuff. I say simple.
It's not simple, but it's simple. Yeah.
Yeah. To an onlooker that can just go on their phone and download an app and feed in a picture and it spits out you a thing. It is seemingly a simple process to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And it's just another notch in the belt of the operating systems that have it, and then Linux.
Yeah, we don't.
We need stuff like that. And I feel like a lot of the attitude in Linux and open source circles run counter to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's going to hamper a whole lot progress in that field.
Or we'll see a split and things will diverge and I'll tap my microphone. But but we'll see that split like we always do in Linux, where you got the crowd that's not happy with change and they're going to stick with this and they'll call it something else maybe, but where the other one is going to go off and do the AI thing. And so I feel like that is probably, it's a fork in the road.
He said the F word.
I know, I did. And you'll see some folks go that way and others not. And I don't know where the majority will go. It'll be yet to be seen.
Well, the predictive generation stuff is going to be tagged as bloat by many.
Ah, that's a good term. Yep, that probably fits. Hey, you like looking at our face? I'm not sure about that. I don't think so. But if you did,
you do.
You could go to YouTube and you could watch us there and subscribe and ding the bell and stuff, and you'll get notifications.
You gotta do all those things. Apparently, that's what the algorithm tells me. Is that what the AI,
is
the
A
in AI stands for?
Is that predictive? I don't know.
Algorithm intelligence?
Maybe.
Actually, that's probably closer to what we want. Yeah,
maybe. And then so
algorithmic.
That, So you can catch us there, and please subscribe, and we'll send you stuff all the time. But if you just want the history bits, and you're into the privacy type open source things, you could
not over, the previous segment.
But you can go over to Tilbits. We're also there, and that's a pretty great platform. You'll find some other great people there too, and I'm really appreciative that they are willing to host our stuff and have. You know, they do it free, and you get it too. And so that's a pretty great platform. Think about donating to them if you don't want to donate to us.
Absolutely.
But if you do want to donate to us, we have a patron at patreon.com/linuxuserspace. And you can become a patron, and you'll get things, little perks, like our Discord channel. We got one of those just for patrons. We've got early access to episodes, and you get some high quality audio episodes, mm-hmm. if that's your jam, all that good stuff. So yeah, we appreciate you, so we get back.
Yep, absolutely. On average, you get those episodes like a day early or so and yeah. And we just got done because me and Dan haven't hung out for a little while because you know, if you've been watching the podcast feed, you notice that was a bit of a gap. So we hadn't gotten the chance to hang out for a little while, and so we just hung out for like an hour
before the episode.
That's no joke. We were talking about, well, how do we take some of this and like put it out? Because we, no joke, pretty much an entire episode before we started the episode. So. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that is just never going to see the light of day outside of the Patreon space and yep. those that, you know, are behind the scenes and hanging out with us back here. So, you know, think about it. There'll be some tidbits we'll put out there, but the rest of it,
it's
exclusive stuff, man.
Exclusive. Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. What do you do when you've been using a workflow for almost 10 years and the developers of the software you use to achieve that workflow sets out on an entirely different path? You can certainly abandon your workflow to adapt to the new paradigm. And many have done exactly this to many softwares over the years. What choice did you really have? Or you can abandon the software entirely and forge a new path with other software that does exactly what you want, or as close as you can get to it anyway. This was the story of change, refinement, and GNOME. We explored that in a previous history delve, and even though the developers and users continued on with GNOME 3 and then 40 with some consternation since 2011, something was brewing in the background. A third option. Instead of adapting your workflow or learning an entirely new one, if you're astute and talented enough, you can pick up the old software and keep it alive. It's all open source, or GPL in this case. After all, this is the strange yet inevitable tale of Mate. Ever since its announcement in 2008, dissent over GNOME's decision to reinvent the wheel and eventually abandon the GNOME 2 paradigm altogether had been growing. Year after year, as GNOME 3 started to take shape leading up to its release in 2011, a steady chorus of "Not my desktop" rang louder and louder. Most would stick to GNOME 2 through 2009, 2010, and some of 2011. But for those that were resistant to change, the release of GNOME 3 on April 6, 2011 was the turning point. It was undeniable now that GNOME 2.32 would be the last familiar version of GNOME. For some, like those on Fedora or users of GNOME on Arch, it would mean a decision would need to be made. For the rest, the distributions would be the bulwark against the impending change for a while, but one by one, distribution after distribution, GNOME 3 was avoided or adopted. And for the distributions that adopted it, like Debian, RHEL, and others, it was accept or abandon. Still others, like Ubuntu, went their own way with Unity. In June of 2011, A light at the end of the tunnel for those still clinging to Gnome 2 started to shine. That light was a post, originally on the Arch Linux forums. Perberos, hailing from Argentina, posted,
"Hello, everyone. I've made a Gnome 2 fork, and I've called it Mate."
Perberos described the fork as,
"The Mate desktop environment. A non-intuitive and unattractive desktop for users using traditional computing desktop metaphor, also known as the Gnome 2 fork."
It was initially available only through the Arch user repository, but that was enough to spark interest from others, both users and developers. When you scale it back a little, Mate at the outset was simple. It really began life as a simple migration script that replaced occurrences of GNOME, Matacity, and Nautilus, among others, with their counterparts, Mate, Marco, and Caja. But even this early on, you got Perberos' influence in naming the native software to Mate, with Caja being box, as in the thing you put stuff in. You know, like a file manager of sorts. It didn't take long before the media began picking up on this scrappy continuation of GNOME 2. Articles began popping up in Pharonix and August and others like InGeek in the days to come. In the following months, Perberos attempted to grow the community by posting the same announcement again, but on the Ubuntu forums in October, and again in the Linux Mint forums in November. Each post garnered support, both from users of other desktops and GNOME refugees that wanted to return and use Mate full-time for the foreseeable future. We've been saying it, Mate, all this time, but what did it really mean, and why do you pronounce it that way? Proudly scrawled across the About Mate desktop page was a quote.
"The name Mate, pronounced Mate, comes from Yerba Mate, a species of holly native to subtropical South America. Its leaves contain caffeine and are used to make infusions and a beverage called mate."
By the end of 2011, the pieces were set. Perberos, Clement Lefebvre, Stefano Carapestas, and Steve Zesch were the founders. Clem led the charge with the inaugural blog post, "Introducing Mate Desktop." It began by lamenting the fact that GNOME 2 is no longer available, but Mate has arrived to carry on the torch.
"Our top priority is to improve Mate and for it to be on par in terms of features and stability with GNOME 2.32. We'll port themes, applets, and applications which were developed for GNOME 2 and help developers port their applications to this new desktop."
Its project goals? Keep the traditional desktop metaphor, and be an alternative for lower-end hardware. While not a true release date, as those tend to happen much later than the packaging itself, we can see that the first mostly usable Mate desktop, version 1.1, was packaged on December 9th, 2011. We can also, at this time, see the evidence of the initial migration script, the author's file that would have listed the original libgnome desktop and gnome about authors, listed them as libmate desktop and mate about authors. You can see similar changes in the hacking and readme files. Curiously, in this and some future releases, a file named nyancat.gif was included in the mate about directory, which didn't exist in its GNOME about predecessor. And yes, it's that Nyancat. By 2012, the four developers listed, and quite a few others, including other developers and many testers, had made advancement after advancement until Mate 1.2 in April. The first thing we checked was whether or not the GNOME and Mate authors were properly credited, and they all were. With Perberos up top and Steve Zesch and Stefano Carapestas below, Clem focused on packaging, so it looks like he missed the cutoff for addition. And of course, the GNOME developers were listed as GNOME developers again. Aside from authorship, many of the odd GNOME-Mate mix-ups were fixed. Caja got an undo function, and Pulse Audio was fully supported. This is also when Mozo, a fork of a la carte, the menu editor, was released. Mozo means waiter in English. All of this on top of the Marco, the Spanish word meaning frame, window manager. Other software was eventually included with special names, like Atril or Lectern, a document viewer, Engrampa or Staple, the file archiver, Pluma or Pen, the text editor, and other non-Spanish named applications like Eye of Mate to view images, the Mate calculator, and the Mate system monitor. All of the native Mate software was forked from their GNOME counterparts. One thing we noticed is that the about window for Mate seemed to change up for every major release, with some of them being a little cheeky, so we thought we'd document the changes. The first official, 1.2.0, about read,
Mate includes most of what you see on your computer, including the file manager, document viewer, image viewer, menus, and many applications.
By May, Salix had been one of the very first distributions to headline Mate, and not just stick it in their development repositories or simply mention it as available on their forum. And in their best version, too, version 13.37, the latest of releases. Following up the release in April was another in July. Mate 1.4 was intended to clean up remnants of issues left over from Mate 1.2, and it did pretty well. In late December, noticing the popularity of Mate and the need for a more traditional paradigm, the GNOME team created GNOME Flashback to continue work on the GNOME fallback mode that still used Metacity and the GNOME panel. They invited those on the Mate team to join, but this history would have been a very short highlight in the GNOME history had the Mate developers actually accepted that offer. The new and old GTK alternatives, GNOME 3, GNOME Classic, GNOME Flashback, LXDE, and XFCE, while they were good and saw varied adoption, just weren't GNOME 2. In 2013, the developers, seeing the need to onboard folks that were interested in developing for the desktop, came up with Mate University, a place to learn to create things like file manager extensions, text editor, and image editor plugins, and panel applets for the Mate desktop. Their confidence was growing, and in April, it showed with the release of Mate 1.6, released on the 2nd, because Mate was no joke. The about read,
GNOME 2 was the most popular Linux desktop, but it's no longer available. Mate is here to provide that same desktop to you.
For the team, it was considered internally as GNOME 2.34, the true successor to the last version, GNOME 2.32. And to add to the professionality of the release, neoncat.gif was no longer included. A truly dark day for Linux desktop historians like us. Another testament to the fact that Mate was a serious desktop with real aspirations of not changing much. But this was Mate's strength. Many of the strongest distros at the time had either added Mate as official or were beginning to work toward that goal. And it wasn't just Linux. In late 2013, GhostBSD, after dabbling mostly in GNOME since its inception, but a little LXDE2, transitioned to the Mate desktop at version 1.6 by default to maintain the same look and feel as their original releases. This also meant that availability in FreeBSD was there too. Now that Mate was truly standing on its own, GNOME had noticed, and the two collaborated to reduce the need for forks of already working software like GNOME Keyring, GWeather, and others. Many, many contributors that were eyeing Mate needed lots of legwork to actually cross the finish line and get them included into their favorite distributions. Stefano had pulled strings earlier in the year to have Mate included in Debian. Martin Wimpress had taken over AUR duties in Archland to swing the packages directly into the community repository. And many others were working tirelessly in their corners of the Linux distribution communities to do the needful. And by the end of the year and into 2014, Mate was officially available in Arch, Debian, Fedora, Linux Mint, OpenSUSE, Sabayon, Salix, and Ubuntu. Starting in 2014, with Perberosa's direct support slipping, Stefano Karapestas stepped up to lead the team. And really, there are no huge developments in Mate. Its purpose was to stay the same and refine what was already there rather than shift paradigms or rethink the way computing should be done, especially on Linuxes and in the Unixes. So the following versions are mostly just iterative quality jumps. And not only is that okay, it's the point. The Mate 1.8 release in March took that usual step forward. It's about said,
Mate provides an intuitive and attractive desktop to Linux users using traditional metaphors.
Mate was updated in September to fix various bugs, and Martin Wimpress took over the release announcement duties. He also released the very first version of Ubuntu Mate, and along with Linux Mint, did the bulk of real changing in Mate so the desktop itself could stay familiar. In 2015, there were two releases. One in June, version 1.10, with an about that read,
Mate is the continuation of GNOME 2. Hundreds of people have contributed code to GNOME since it was started in 1997. Many more have contributed in other important ways, including translations, documentation, and quality assurance.
And another, 1.12, in November. The about here read,
Mate is a free, usable, stable, accessible desktop environment for the Unix-like family of operating systems.
This also marked the point at which Mate had real, live, non-experimental GTK3 support, which gave the developers much more runway to continue doing their slow and steady thing. 2016 also saw a couple of releases, 1.14 in April and 1.16 released in September. The about stagnated a little here, but they sort of picked up again later on. And just when you thought the adoption phase of Mate was over, also in September, there was some movement. Born of the Oracle Solaris controversy was a new Unix flavor, Open Indiana. It was a BSD founded by none other than Debian founder Ian Murdoch, based on OpenSolaris and later Illumios. But the September release of 1.16 was cutting things a little close, so they stuck with Mate 1.14. 2017 saw one release, Mate 1.18, released in March. It marked full GTK3 Plus adoption, meaning every bit of GTK2 code could be, and in most cases had been, dropped. Almost a full year later in February, Mate 1.20 was released and brought with it high DPI support with dynamic detection and scaling. No logout, login required, and Atril was completely reworked. 2019 was another single release year. Mate 1.22 was released in March and marked the first big step forward in support. Back end, of course. Don't mess with a good thing. The Mate panel had been reworked to work in Wayland. And as always, a slew of small improvements to make things iteratively better. The about changed again, but this one was just a rehash of Mate 1.6's about page. 2020 saw one release as well. Mate 1.24 released in February. And you might think, this is becoming a thing. Yearly releases. Well, hold on to your hats. We have a rough ride ahead. Another new old about. This time a rehash of 1.10. And you can go back to see what that was. At the beginning of this history, the release in August of 2021 was the last release, Mate 1.26. But it saw lots of Wayland progress. Atril, Pluma, Terminal, and the System Monitor were all Wayland ready and lots of other modernization. But then there was a lull, outward facing at least. Posts dried up on the blog, and news and updates were far and few between for the next long while. It was so quiet, in fact, that between 2022 and 2024, post after post on forum and Reddit alike were created with a similar thought. Was Mate dead? Was it dying? Should I even bother? Internally, of course, that wasn't the case. 1.27 was released as a development branch of 1.28 and saw three additional releases in 2023 and another in 2024. 1.26 continued on as well with two releases in 2023. And that really didn't mean there wasn't any drama either, however closed off it was. On September 12th of 2023, Clem had his part ownership of Mate removed, and he had this to say.
I no longer co-own the Mate project. I said something Wolfgang Ulbrich disagreed with on September 12th. He removed me from the team that day. The next day, he took away my ownership of the project on GitHub.com. We were both trusted as co-owners along with Martin Winterpress and Stefano Karapestas.
To all of our surprise, especially Dan and I, because we ended up having to postpone this very episode, there was another release in February of 2024 while we were sitting out. On February 12th, 2024, Mate 1.28, after 3 years, was released, and 1.28.1 was released shortly after to fix issues with Meson packaging. Looking to the future, Wayland support for Mate apps is almost there, with the Mate Control Center being the only package without Wayland support. And it's almost like it was planned that both Dan and I had to sit out. Because had we actually recorded when we intended on recording, we would have missed this particular part of the history by one day.
By one day.
But as fortune would have it, we're here to tell you, Mate 1.28 is released, and at this point, every single media outlet that would normally report a release like this has said absolutely nothing.
All right, you can catch all the great topics as they unfold on our Lemmy subreddit, our news channel, or on Discord. We've got, we dumped the news right to your face in Lemmy and our subreddit and Discord. The stuff that we curate that we think everybody here will love. So you can catch all that there. But you can also interact with us on, Mastodon, Telegram, Matrix, and, we do streaming things on Twitch, and, we've got a Twitter as well, X, whatever you're calling that. We've got a presence there as well. So you can catch all those things, linuxuserspace.show/thething, and you'll get there.
Okay, so I gotta continue on with the thing that we were talking about at the end of the history, is that somehow, some way, I know Mate is not flashy.
No.
But how have we gotten to the point where a major release of Mate 1.28 was not
shouted from the rooftops?
Is it because there wasn't a blog post? The blog is dead.
It seems like the website is very inactive.
You would think that there would be some kind of something for the point releases, because there was 1.26, right? That was the last blog post in 2021.
They went from 26 to 28. That feels substantial.
Well, so a lot like KDE with their silly high number versioning of like 5.98 that rolls into Plasma 6. And GNOME... Doesn't GNOME do an odd number thing?
They do, and so does XFCE. They also do that as well. Yeah,
that's right. And this is where Mate inherited it from.
Right.
So 1.27 had been in the works for a good long while, and even Ravit, what is his name? The guy that Wolfgang Ulbricht, he had even said a month prior to the release, which is why I was like, watch. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen,
He said, if I look in my crystal ball, I see it coming soon. And I was like, well, if me and Dan record an episode, obviously it's going to be right.
The day after.
And it was.
It really
and
was.
The only good thing about, seriously, both of us, I don't know, I think Dan may have had the worst of it, but the only good thing that came out of us being sick, as far as the show was concerned, is Mate had the extra 24 hours to release 1.28 so that we could add it to the history.
Right.
It just it just blows my mind. But what blows my mind even more is that nobody said anything about it.
Yeah, nobody. But the other thing is, you've tried it out.
Okay, so there are two places that I know of besides Open Mandriva Cooker, which is probably, okay, so there's three places, Open Mandriva Cooker. There are three places that I know that you can actually get Mate 1.28, Open Mandriva Cooker being one of them, which is, I would venture a guess, correct me if I'm wrong, internet, the same as Fedora Rawhide.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Fedora Rawhide being the second place
right.
that you can actually try out Mate 1.28. The third. And I'm just so excited to say it because it's seriously, historically, in my heart, my favorite Linux distribution of all time. Dan, you could probably guess what it is at this point. Slackware.
Okay.
It is available in Slackware.
Well, thanks, Alien Bob, probably.
That's, I don't think this is Alien Bob's doing. I think it's like a third party.
Another community
Slack
member.
Yes, yeah. Yes. It's a Slackware community member that's putting it together. But you can get Mate 1.28 in one of those three places. I just happen to be most familiar with Fedora Rawhide at this moment because I've been doing Fedora Rawhide for Plasma.
We did, yeah.
I'm still doing it. I haven't quit.
I mean, so let's be real here. The hype train building up to, you know, new GNOME versions and new Plasma versions. There's like release candidates and alphas and betas and all that stuff, right? You got any hype train on Mate? No, you don't. And it's kind of because there isn't a whole lot to really discover new. Although they're working towards some important things in the Wayland adoption, and that's
right.
That is pretty important, and there's a lot of work to that. I'm not dismissing any of that. But as we said in the history, the whole idea is to remain the same and look the same and act the same. And so it's just not exciting for a lot of the news, you know, outlets and stuff, probably.
Yeah. It's twofold, and that's one of the issues.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, like, what could Mate possibly do that would be
just
groundbreaking or new? That's quite literally the antithesis mm-hmm. of their existence.
Yep.
They do not do groundbreaking. They do more of the same.
No, they just continue to work. That's what they do. And that's
right.
That's great. There's a lot of maintenance, and that's takes a lot of work. Yes.
It absolutely does, because not only are they not changing on the front face of it, they're iterating in the back, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about the Wayland adoption
yeah.
and the slow march toward Wayland compatibility. And that's maybe Mate 1.30 is going to be, yeah, you could do Wayland now on it. But
yeah, completely.
I mean, we're not there yet. And I think Control Center is still not quite there yet. So there's still some work to be done. But, you know, the other leg of that, the other fold of that, is that there's still nothing on the blog.
Nope.
They have not even officially announced Mate 1.28.
No,
Mate-desktop.org does not have a Mate 1.28, even though it is an official, full, regular,
right.
stable, everybody can have it release. They haven't said anything about it. So obviously, neither has the media. So I get it.
Yeah, they're watching that, and that's what they see, and they're not seeing anything to write about, right?
I mean, it takes a special kind of interest to be able to follow a GitHub releases channel to see that Mate 1.28 has been released. And even then, what's different?
Yeah, so not a ton, but obviously they've been working towards Wayland.
Yeah, and I think I allude to it a little bit in the history, but I mean, Mate development is not where the interesting stuff really actually happens. It's in, you used Ubuntu Mate, is that right?
I did, and so it's probably one of the most customized, I would say, out of the box. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got some themes and stuff. So I will say, I put a screenshot up here for you to see. And
this is, by the way, I want to stop you there for a second because
yep.
we started the show with an AI topic.
We did.
And I don't know if you know this, but I want to point out that the Minotaur that sits on your screen right now, Mr. Simmons, was generated by AI.
He absolutely was, yeah.
These topics don't come out of thin air, folks.
They
are always topical. They're always related somehow.
There's tie-ins there. But so even as cool as that guy is, like, you can see that I absolutely changed up the normal default look. And I went to the Redmond look, the theme, whatever.
Redmond, sir, this is not a Windows podcast. I'm going to need you to go ahead and disconnect right now.
Well, it's kind of where I go with all of the things. I make them all look the same. I'm very
it's familiar, isn't
very
it?
Boring in that regard. So it's panel on the bottom, menu on the left, and, you know, all that. App indicators over on the right, the clock and all that stuff, right? They all look the same. They're more or less, or at least function very similarly. And so that's kind of my favorite look. And I feel like Ubuntu Mate actually gives you a lot of things to be able to switch very easily into different themes. They have a lot of them built in. You can just click the little thing and within seconds it changes, you know, whatever. And so I really, if I'm going to pick one, that's probably where I'm going to gravitate to, because it's just kind of great.
Yeah. And I really don't disagree, because if you go anywhere else outside of the Ubuntu sphere, if you go anywhere else and get a Mate desktop, maybe Manjaro is different. I'm not positive on that, but maybe Manjaro is different.
Everybody
else, if you go to Fedora, as I was on Rawhide to get the latest and greatest Mate, oh my, look the same as Mate 1.26. If you get that, or you go to Debian, or you go, I think actually, no, I take that back. OpenSUSE might have that cool menu that you're looking at on Ubuntu. But pretty much anywhere else, you're going to get the GNOME 2 paradigm with the applications, places, system on the top left.
On the top.
You have that empty bar. And on the top right, you have your application indicators and like your off button.
Right.
And then on the bottom, you get on the bottom left, you get the show desktop.
Right.
Then across the bottom, you get the, when you have open applications, they're shown from the moment that you open them. And in the bottom right, you get your workspace switcher. That's what you get down there in the bottom right. That's pretty much how it's been. I mean, it's just GNOME 2 redo on most distributions. So I do agree with you, though. The paradigm of having that menu come up in the bottom left and not having the top menu across the top, that's where I'm at, too. But I differ just a little bit in where I went.
All right.
So for the majority of my time, besides the Fedora Rawhide Mate 1.28, because I could only do that for 2 days because it literally released like a few days ago. I went with Linux Mint Mate.
Okay. Yeah.
And buddy, let me tell you, it's actually kind of difficult to say I've been on Linux Mint Mate and I want to leave. That's difficult to do. Because it's all of the things that I need in a computer. My normal workflow is Linux Mint Cinnamon.
Right.
And Linux Mint Mate is basically just Cinnamon, but redone in Mate. So the workflow is the same. The paradigm is the same. The menu is pretty close. But everything else is pretty much spot on for what I've been doing for years and years and years and years. And man, if I had a machine that was maybe a little less capable, had a little less RAM, and I didn't need to do anything, you know, heavy on it, man, it would be a really hard time for me to say, nah, I don't need that. I don't need Linux Mint Mate, because they do a really good Linux. This is my whole problem, is that Linux Mint does a really good job at the user-facing applications to make things simple.
They add some flair there to help the ease people into things. Absolutely.
It's the system administration side that nobody ever wants to think about or deal mm-hmm. with that Linux Mint, I think, has done a stellar job in simplifying. It's just, it reminds you, you click on it, it's like, hey, do your updates. And I do my updates. Mm-hmm. And then I don't think about it again for a while. And they've really kind of simplified that onboarding as well. So it's really hard for me
right.
to get away from just the familiarity of it, I think.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. Like I like you said, like it's the same paradigm that I pick everywhere. But like you, man, even though it's like super customizable, lots of themes out there. You can go download GNOME looks or whatever stuff and customize things left and right. It might very well be one of the most customizable desktops out there. I don't know.
But specifically to the Ubuntu Mate one, you kind of alluded to it, but there's a whole lot of customizability baked into the Ubuntu Mate specifically
true
version.
But you can download all that stuff and bring it into any of the other distributions too. It's there. It's ready for the taking. It's just
yeah.
most don't. And I don't know. Yeah, so like I could live on this, but it's not where I'm going to stay.
But it's not LXQt.
It's not LXQt. It's not even Plasma. it's not either of those true. Two things, right? And so like I know it is lighter probably than many of the other desktops, but it isn't the lightest. So, I mean, you know, there's other options there too. I didn't do any like performance comparisons, but.
But you don't need to, right? Like, I mean.
In a way. I know. Like I know it's using more RAM than LXQt or Plasma probably. I don't know. But it feels fine. It does feel fine. It's very snappy. It's very responsive. It works really well. So,
yeah, I think if you compared it to XFCE,
yeah,
like it would probably fight XFCE for
I think
which
so.
One is going to be the lightest one of the two.
I think so. And I don't know, like, I don't know why I can't stay there, but it's not where I want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I have a slightly more comfortable view of it. I feel like I could. But, you know, more than that, I feel like if I needed a GUI on a device that was lesser equipped or especially on a VM.
Yeah.
Mate has and will continue to be my go-to. Me and XFCE, the low animation Plasma mode is actually the contender. Not XFCE. You can miss me with that. But the low non-animated version of Plasma is the only thing I think that could step up to, in my opinion, Mate on a lower spec machine. But because of the compatibility of GTK versus the compatibility of Qt, in terms of the way things look on the screen, not in terms of can you run it on the desktop, because that's the same. I think Mate wins it, and I think that's why I go with Mate on a machine like that. But I do want to just stop and take a minute to dote on Ubuntu Mate is the only one that I know of that has that switcher, like look and feel switcher.
There's a few things that are built into Ubuntu Mate, and I didn't really touch on that because it's not an Ubuntu Mate episode, but
it's so hard to not talk about it.
Well, it's what I use, so I can say that, yes, they add some value-add things, much like Linux Mint does to the things that they produce.
But they don't give you a choice. Ubuntu Mate gives you a full-on
There's a lot choice. Of choice. There are a lot of choices.
Yeah.
So they have the Software Boutique. That's another thing. And they have the Welcome app that brings you in, and you have the browser elections, you know, choice thing. There's a lot of those things that they bring. And included with that is obviously the theme switcher. And that's right there in front of
My
you.
Favorite
as
thing.
Soon as you start, it lets you pick your theme and your color accents and all of that stuff right out of the gate. And so that is a pretty nice touch. And it is probably one of the only ones that lets you do that, right? So
even more, there's they still have it, right? I didn't use Ubuntu Mate, but I know they've had it in the past. It's where you can go into the full on make it feel like Unity. Mm-hmm. Make yeah, it no, feel Unity like is Mac
one of the
OS.
Choices. Like they have all of the choices. They have the Cupertino one, which is the Mac OS lookalike. They got the Redmond
the
one.
The Redmond one.
Which is
yeah.
like Windows 7-ish sort of feel. And then they've got some other ones too. I didn't even explore all of the options that they have, but I know they have those. They've got the traditional GNOME 2 look with the panels on the top and the bottom.
Right.
And so they've got everything encompassed. And they can make it look like anything you want it to look like. And so that's why I say it's like obviously one of the most customizable and configurable desktops out there. I know you can do a lot of that stuff in the other ones. It's just not in front of your face as easily.
Yeah, you got to configure it.
Yeah.
And unless you're looking to go configure your desktop, it's not going to be right there front and center. And I think that's why both Dan and I have kind of settled on the two best distributions for Mate mm-hmm. in existence.
I think so, yeah.
Ubuntu Mate for being able to change up, have that Ubuntu base, you know, take advantage of snaps yep. if that's what you want.
Yep.
But have the options to make it look the way you want mm-hmm. in Ubuntu Mate, but also the other choice being Linux Mint Mate, where you don't have the customizability of what the desktop looks like,
right.
but I feel like you get the better desktop and overall environment.
You get all those Mint tools that kind of are great. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And embrace Flatpak out of the gate.
Right.
Where I think that does seem to me to be where the community is leaning. But,
yeah.
you know, you can't go wrong with either because you can get both things on either. But I do feel like Ubuntu Mate or Linux Mint Mate, those are going to be the two where that's...
I think they're the front runners.
Yeah, that's really where, if you want like desktop innovation, if you want where the desktop is going to shine in a Mate, that's where that stuff's mm-hmm. happening.
Yeah, I agree. So I had a good experience. I'd do it again, and I did it for a month, but I've moved on.
And I got to mirror that, except it's hard for me to move on because it's just so familiar. I like it a whole lot. It's just a very good experience
yeah, it is good.
In general, especially on Linux Mint. I think that's where my bias really kind of shows. But I mean, you can't go wrong, especially on a lower spec machine. You just can't go wrong. So yeah, I think we agree. Mate is a good one. If you're, especially if you're on a lower spec machine, Mate is definitely worth your time.
So you can catch all the great links at linuxuserspace.show. And if you want to send us an email and give us some feedback, we've got a topic show coming up. You can send them to contact@linuxuserspace.show, and hopefully we'll read them on the show.
We got a lot. We got so apparently people listen to the show and actually do the thing.
Yeah, Leo called it, and there it is. They came in droves.
We've got someone that is mainly Spanish speaking listens to the show through captions.
Wow.
Like automatically, speaking of AI, generated translations into Spanish to listen to the show and kind of get experience with the history and stuff like that. So that's
it's a better Spanish experience than me trying to speak it to you. So you're welcome.
But then we hit a history of the original dev being from Argentina, speaking Spanish, having applications like Atril, and you know, so you know, you get a little bit of a crossover right before we end up diving straight into
got a
the
little
feedback.
Bit of that in GNOME as well with Miguel de Casa from
you
Mexico,
do
right?
who's from Mexico City,
yeah.
Mexico,
yeah, yeah,
well,
yeah.
at least went to school in Mexico City.
Well, yeah. So I mean, yeah, there's a couple of those.
Love it. I absolutely love it. So our borders are expanding slowly but surely. So
I'm cool with that.
The more emails, the yeah. better. Those are the ones I feel like it's real easy to just kind of insert into the show. Because I swear, if you're writing us an email, you tend to be more long-winded and there's a whole lot more to think about than a you know 6-word YouTube comment
yeah.
that we talk. Not saying.
We've had some good conversations out of those too, so.
Have you seen the size of some of these YouTube comments? Oh my God, they are large. And that's why they end up being in the show. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you email us, if you leave a comment, no matter where it is, if you're thoughtful in your delivery, if you make a cool point, or, you know, if the conversation is interesting, I have a feeling, Dan, one of these topic episodes is just going to be too large with feedback, and it's just going to be
all feedback.
We're going to have to have
the all feedback show.
It's going to be history and a feedback show, but
that's okay. That's fun. A really good problem to have, and I appreciate everybody that sends stuff in, and I read them all. Don't think I don't. I do.
Yep. How fun an episode would that be?
It could be.
All we had time for was feedback, because
I'd be okay.
What are topics if not keeping your pulse on,
right,
or keeping your finger on the pulse of what's going on, and what's going on if not the stuff that people are talking about? And if the people are talking about it to us, then what I'm trying to say is I like your feedback. I love it a lot. Mm-hmm.
So next time is topic show, our next history. You're going to like this. Leo will.
Will I?
Maybe not. All right, so maybe not.
Dan will.
It's a pretty good one. It's led into the thing that I'm really into, but it's the precursor to that, and that's
right.
That's LXDE, and so we've got to go back to the 2011 time frame when things were busting up, breaking apart.
Little before that, I think we dug it up right before, because it was a fight. We're either going to do LXDE first and then Cinnamon later, or Cinnamon first and LXDE later.
I think they kind of all spawned at the same time, so it's hard to say.
Yeah, little spoiler alert, but LXDE, and that is what eventually turned into LXQt. So that's going to be a fun history to kind of dive down into.
It goes deep.
It does. All right. But so I'm going to lean on Dan
a
whole lot on this one, just because
some of it's how I cut my teeth, and here we are. So it'll be good. It'll be a good episode. And I'm really looking forward to it. So
that's right.
So stay tuned. You can tell us all the things on Reddit, Twitter, Mastodon, Telegram, Matrix, Discord, whatever. However you do that, join the conversation. We'll have all the links in the show notes and on linuxuserspace.show. So, Leo, where can we find you?
You can always find me at Leo Chavez on all the things, but specifically on at mastodon.social or the old Twitters.
All right, and you can find me at KC2BZ on the mastodon.social or also on the Twitters. So please come back in 2 weeks and join us for more Linux User Space. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
On the next page over for music lovers, was a Creative Labs Sound Blaster Audigy 2 Platinum.
Oh, that's the one.
So you remember, not all the machines came with sound capabilities, so sometimes you had to add that on. And so
sometimes at that point, I think it was
they were starting to come around. Yeah,
but
it was kind of crap, right?
This was before they started adding color to all of the little holes, all the little things.
Yep.
They were all black.
And so this little guy, anyone with a discriminating ear will tell you that a kickin' PC speaker system is nothing without a stellar sound card. Creative Labs Sound Blaster Audigy 2 Platinum features crystal clear, noise-free 5.1 channel output, plus handy front-mounted input and output jacks. Guess how much that cost?
$800.
Not quite. $199.99. Okay. $200 to add on sound to your already expensive PC. That's what that cost. Yeah. And like it wow. did. It
had
like
it's a, just a sound card. No, that sounds, that's about right. Okay.
Yeah. It's a, like, yeah. Get the right camera. I don't know which one. One of them. But yeah, the thing had like a drive bay insert that gave you the inputs and outputs on the front panel, right? Like, so you wow. had the CD DVD drives. This went like underneath one of those in one of the drive bays, 5 1/4 job.